So in 1996, I had just graduated from undergraduate college and had about a nine-month break until I was going to graduate school in the fall. And so I found a job working at Kinko's Copy Center. Yeah, so some of you remember that place. So Kinko's Copy Center was a really interesting place. It was kind of a staple across the country in communities everywhere. These were places that you went to make copies, to have binders made, all sorts of things. And so it was a mix of business people doing all sorts of business transactions, as well as a weird mix of people from across the community that now had access to technologies that now we all take for granted and can print and scan and do all sorts of things in our house. But at the time, you had to go somewhere like Kinko's. And so you had DIY publishers, all sorts of creative types, people making online content. And so it was an interesting mix of people. And also adding to that was interesting that Kinko's was open 24 hours a day. So there was a wide range of people that came in. And so I went to work at Kinko's, and I worked on two different shifts. A couple days out of the week, I worked 3 to 11. Pretty standard fare, people coming in, making copies for business transactions, very run-of-the-mill. And those were the normal times. I also worked the graveyard shift. And so the graveyard shift was typically 10 until 6 in the morning, or midnight to 8 sometimes. And overnight, we did all sorts of very, very large print jobs. So at a Kinko's, for anybody who's under 35, this makes no sense to you, that you know, for those of us who remember, you used to go to business meetings, and there would be, 50 three-ring punch hole binders filled with papers and tabs and charts. And so, for those of you who go to Second Avenue thrift stores, you see those big bins of binders, and like, what is that? From the 90s at the Kinko's, right to you. And so I spent a lot of time making those overnight. That was kind of the overnight job. But we were open 24 hours a day, so all sorts of people would kind of come in and out. And so on the graveyard shift, worked with some different people at different times. So one guy I worked with was Bob. And actually, the first night I started on the graveyard shift, I worked with Bob. And Bob was in his mid-30s, had a wife and a kid. He was in kind of a different stage of life than I was. And so I was 22 years old, just out of college, had a girlfriend, was kind of very different thought on, what to do. And Bob was a nice guy. And Bob immediately in the first 30 minutes kind of establishes some ground rules for me about how we operate. He lets me know that after 10 p.m., we lock the door to the Kinko's. And I thought, okay. And so he explains it to me. He says, well, because in the previous year, when he was working one night, overnight, somebody came in and robbed him at gunpoint, tied him up, and then hours later, he was found by customers coming in. He had to go file his own police report for the store, and then they made him come back to work the next day. So I'm kind of starting off on my first overnight, like not really sure about who I'm working for at this point. And then I also worked with another guy most Fridays. His name was Steve. Steve was in his mid-40s, very nice guy. He was single. He was kind of living his best version of his life. And we got along well, and without fail, every time we worked together, at 6 or 8 in the morning when we got off, he would say, hey, Dennis, do you want to go get some breakfast with me? And then he would add that with, at the strip club. I would politely decline because my girlfriend, now my wife, who's out here, would come pick me up, and we would go have breakfast at a local place, and Steve would go off and do his thing. So that was interesting, and I never understood, just as an aside, how that worked out. They paid us like $7 or $8 an hour from a week-to-week basis. I don't know how financially he could make that work, but he did. Then I also worked with a guy named Paul occasionally, and Paul was in his like early 60s or so, and Paul was a little quiet and worn. Standard Kinko's attire was a blue Oxford button-down and a tie and typically khaki pants. Paul was always wearing, over top of that, a very weathered, beaten black leather jacket. And he was very quiet. From talking to him, Paul had just seen a lot of things in life. And he kept himself, but he utilized that time to really connect with his family. He utilized all the Kinko services to do his family tree, a massive book with huge fold-out charts. He was printing up, binding things, and doing that on an overnight shift in between our jobs. So those were some of the people that I worked with. That was kind of a different experience for me. And then there were many nights when I worked by myself. And so when you're on the overnight shift, you do have the discretion to lock the door. That is the policy. Say you can lock it. You can buzz people in from behind the counter. Your call. And it was always a little bit of a, you know, kind of a secret thrill, right? Is this guy coming in to, you know, 2 in the morning to print up copies of his real estate proposal, or am I looking at a pistol whipping? I don't know. So luckily that never happened. It was all smooth. But, you know, overnight shift, all sorts of people come in. There's a different subculture that comes out to a well-lit place called Kinko's at 2, 3, 4 in the morning. And it was interesting because when you were working at the store, the company policy was that we had to make copies of anything people brought in, provided it wasn't illegal content. So you might find it offensive. When I worked 3 to 11, if I didn't like what somebody had, I had a personal objection, somebody else in the store had to copy it. That was company policy. We're going to copy it. You might not have to do it. Overnight, I'm the guy copying it because there's nobody else. And I was fine with it. Had some interesting interactions. You know, there was, I remember one time one guy came in very, I'll say standard vanilla looking male in his, you know, mid-30s, and he had a folder with some photos that he wanted color copies of. And they were photos of him in extremely extreme costumes and attire in various states of undress. And he was making copies for his lover. And so, you know, make those copies. Here you go, sir. And there was, you know, other times when people come in to make nominal copies of something, but really it would end up a 45-minute discourse from somebody explaining to me why American ice figure skating is going down the tubes because they don't skate to classical music and it's not going to work internationally. So we had those experiences. And then even there was a guy who came in pretty regularly, you know, older gentleman, very grandfatherly type, come by taxi. The taxi would wait while he was there for about 40 minutes. This taxi would just be metering in the parking lot. And he would share with me and get copies of his special newsletter that covered world events. And suffice it to say, this would make the fodder for a great Netflix docuseries nowadays, what he was talking about in his newsletter. So it was a real wide array of people that for, you know, young doe-eyed Dennis was a different slice of life. So it also had some high drama. It wasn't without high drama. There was where the Kinko's was located was right across the street from a large university, and also right across the street from a bar/nightclub. And so people would come in and go to the bar and want to park in our parking lot. And people were still coming in pretty regularly until 11 or midnight doing all sorts of regular business transactions. And our lot was small. It would fill up quickly. They would get mad. So a manager decided, I'm going to hire somebody that will sit in the delivery van in the parking lot from like 10 to midnight and tell people you can't park here and then tow cars, have cars towed, call, right? So this was like 98% effective that people would, I'm not going to park here. But there was 2%, and that 2% is always going to get you, that they didn't care or they were indifferent to it or they didn't think they were going to follow through, and they would just park and go off to the bar. And then later on, you know, bars close at 2 a.m., and around 2 a.m. or so, I'd be working, and suddenly there would be banging on the windows of drunk people with liquid courage, just slam. It was like the end of The Graduate where Dustin Hoffman is just hammering the windows. And I definitely did not buzz those people in. And typically, they kind of just stumbled off into the night, and that was that. It was fine. But occasionally, it wasn't. So once a month, at least once a month, very closely linked to these times when there's upset people, I'd be working by myself, doing my work, and smell a smell that you don't want to smell when you're in a building that is packed full of highly flammable material, paper. Smelling smoke, I smell a fire. But I quickly figured out what was going on. Luckily, I followed the smell of the smoke to the back door of our building and it opened up to an alleyway. And so in the alleyway, we had three dumpsters. We had regular trash, cardboard, and then a paper dumpster. Nowadays, lots of people throw around for all sorts of situations the term, that's a dumpster fire. I can tell you, I know dumpster fires, my friends, okay? There is a dumpster fire ablaze out back, and luckily, right by the back door, which I kind of put together later, was probably by design by Kinko's, there was a utility sink with a hose attached to it. And so I quickly grab the hose, and I'm kind of spraying this thing and trying to maintain. I don't know what I'm doing, trying to put out this fire. And but luckily, very short order, the fire department would come. Somebody called, I don't know if it was a neighbor called 911 or if the person who said it called it after they said it, but they would show up very quickly, so nothing bad happened. But they get out with their fire truck, and they get their hose, and within 10 seconds, they've filled up that dumpster with water. They put it right out, and it literally fills off and they go off. Well, this is a big problem now. Later in the week when the garbage gets picked up, they can't lift the bin. It's too heavy. So that's when I also realized, oh, this is why we have a six foot pry bar by the back door. And so I would have to take the pry bar and tip this dumpster over in the alley. A cascade of water and charred paper would go flying out into the street. And so that was working at Kinko's. It was an interesting experience. I learned a lot. I learned how to basically be my own first responder. I learned how to deal with a lot of different people. And, you know, what I found was that, you know, sometimes people, they're just looking for somebody to talk to. They want to be heard. And sometimes people just want their car back. Thank you. Good night.